This is Kind of Funny Games Daily for Thursday, July 5th, 2018. I'm your host, Jared Petty, joined here today by the pure one, Mr. Tim Geddes.
Let Tim host.
Look at this. We're let Tim host indeed. And yeah, yes,
I love it.
And what am I doing over here?
I love it. I love that you're doing it. This is the only combination that we haven't done before where it's you hosting and me just being on the show.
Right.
At least for me. Well, I guess once you include Gary, it gets kind of complicated.
Has Gary ever hosted on this side?
As far as I know, Gary's never hosted it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that hasn't happened.
I'd be interested in seeing that. He would not put up with any of this bullshit. I can tell you that much.
No, not at all.
I don't know that he would do any of it.
I love the idea of angry Gary just throwing everything out and ranting about printers for another 10 minutes. That sounds pretty spectacular. Friends, thank you for joining us here today. Kind of Funny Games Daily, where each and every day we provide you with the news around the games industry that you need and want to hear. It's an exciting opportunity. Today, if we get something wrong, you can go to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong and let us know in the middle of the show right now in real time. You can watch right now at Kind of Funny Games or Twitch TV.
Yeah, twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames to watch live.
I should have written that down in the thing,
but fine.
I didn't.
You know, it's the
y'all know where this thing happens. I'm not going to through all that. Housekeeping.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, for today, first off, Greg Miller's Montreal meetup July 5th. That's tonight, this day, 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Le Terminal. I don't know. And that's 5 p.m. Montreal time.
You know what? It must be, right?
That's my assumption.
That's how.
So right now, it's about noon here. So that's only like 2 hours.
Yeah.
Wow.
So don't watch the show. Go hang out.
Le Terminal. Well, you should watch the show and then immediately leave for Le Terminal.
Or with the power of a phone, watch it live on the way.
That's a pretty exceptional idea, too. Today's episode is sponsored by Marvel Puzzle Quest, but we will get to that later. But first, it's time for What Is and Forever Will Be the Roper Report. Time for some news. 5 items on the Roper Report today.
A baker's dozen.
Kevin, I appreciate the enthusiasm.
It's real
love
good.
That. It's a lot of energy there.
I'm feeling it.
Mr. Geddes, you feeling
yes,
it?
Yes, I am.
Are you ready to bake our way through today's?
I am. I just realized I forgot a piece of paper. I'll be right back. Start reading.
Is it that spare piece of paper that you printed out?
Yes.
I have that with me, just in case you forgot it.
Thank you.
There it is, right there.
Damn,
look at that.
Saving the day, dude.
There we go. So, Roper Report number one. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Todd Howard of Bethesda Game Studios has some things to say about single player. This item comes to you from GamesIndustry.biz by Hayden Taylor. Bethesda Game Studios remains one of the few big developers not owned by a platform holder that hasn't moved away from almost entirely single-player experiences into games as a service. While many game developers and publishers are still including single-player modes in their games, there's a clear trend away from this, sparking a recent debate around, quote, the death of single-player.
No.
Although the announcement that Fallout 76 would be a shared world survival game may have added credence to that argument, studio head Todd Howard says it doesn't represent a permanent departure for the company away from single-player experiences.
Good.
It doesn't mark the future, he tells GamesIndustry.biz during an interview at Game Lab Barcelona. Corporately, we've done a mix. People forget sometimes. Elder Scrolls Online is one of the biggest online games in the world. Mm. We have Fallout Shelter, which we keep updating, and Elder Scrolls Legends. Anyone who's ever said, quote, this is the future, and this part of gaming is dead, end quote, has been proven wrong every single time. We like to try it all. That's what Howard says. For a long time, we wanted to try a multiplayer game, and we had this idea. We shouldn't be afraid. We should try it. We're going to move on to a little more of that story in a second. But first, Mr. Geddes, what do you think of Mr. Howard's words regarding this topic?
I appreciate that it's not just lip service and that they can back it up with Bethesda's library of titles. And I feel like this year's showing at E3 is a really good example of that. We've seen it the last couple of years with their press conferences, but you know they're kind of new to the press conference circuit.
Yeah.
3 years deep now. And when they first came through and they had Fallout 4, it's like that made sense. That's why they had a press conference.
Yeah.
When they came back the following year, we were all kind of surprised, not expecting them to necessarily do the conference again. And now I don't see a future where they ever stop doing the conference. And I think that they no longer need that one big title. It can kind of be, hey, check out everything that we're doing. Here's updates. Here's some DLC plans. Here's expansions. Here's sequels. Here's, you know, they kind of just have so much going on. That in addition to what he's talking about with the Elder Scrolls Online and all that, we also get to see game like single player focused games like Wolfenstein.
Yep.
But then we also get the tease of the future of things like Starfield and Elder Scrolls 6, which you can guarantee, and they even said, are going to be very much single player focused games.
You are Mr. Gent Pipe, Mr. Tim. I'm curious about it. From last year's Bethesda conference, what single thing got you most hyped up?
The one that just happened?
Yeah, the one that just happened.
Probably the Wolfenstein expansion pack. That looked awesome.
So you were focused on that particular single player thing is the thing that grabbed you most. Mm-hmm. What do you think of Fallout 76?
Personally, I couldn't care less. I'm not a Fallout guy. I'm not a multiplayer guy. So this game is like, you know, two strikes for me.
Okay, so it's two strikes there. So just the fact that you're not a Fallout guy wasn't a problem for you there. But if it had been a... Yeah, okay, that makes a lot of sense.
I'm very interested by the game, though.
Okay.
I feel like the timing of when it's coming out is very key to the make-or-break ability of that game. I'm interested to see Greg Miller and how much he gets into this world, because he, for the longest time, was not a multiplayer guy.
Right.
But over the last couple of years, that's been changing with things like Monster Hunter World and Destiny 2, and all of that. And I can see him, and he loves Fallout, so I can see this kind of being something that does really suck him in. But it is around a time where we do have Red Dead coming out. We do have all these other games, and you can only have so much time to put into something.
It's going
to
be really crowded. You've got that. You've got Red Dead. You've got thinking about, you know, Odyssey coming up at some point here. It's so much happening. Mm-hmm. So, ladies and gentlemen, a second part to this story. Continuing from GameIndustry.biz. A newfound focus on mobile with games like Fallout Shelter, The Elder Scrolls Legends, and The Elder Scrolls Blades shows that bosses at Bethesda see the commercial value of the platform. But Howard says Bethesda has typically employed a lighter touch with monetization, contrary to the advice of consultants, an approach he intends to continue with Blades. It's definitely a lighter touch, which surprisingly worked very well for us in Fallout Shelter, says Howard. I was forced to meet with a lot of, quote, monetization experts, he puts it in quotes, end quote, during Fallout Shelter that didn't work for us. I said, that's nice, and then we came out, and the first week it was above Candy Crush with a very light touch. We did learn a lot, though. So what are you saying there?
What a fucking baller-ass dude, man. Tom Howard is the voice of the people. I just love it. I love at Game Awards when Bethesda made that save single player, the hashtag.
Yeah.
I don't remember what the hashtag was, but
it was focused on that.
And I'm just like, I just love that they not only do they fucking make awesome games, they also have a great spokesperson, multiple great spokespeople. Add Pete Hines to that, like so honest and transparent, and they can just talk their shit because they can back it up.
They have a personality. It is hard for a corporation, even a corporation that makes toys for a living, like Bethesda does, to have a personality that is consistent in its forward facing approach to its audience. They've managed to do that. They have created an appealing, consistent corporate voice that doesn't, by and large, feel obnoxious, but rather feels like they relate to you and have some idea where you're coming from. And in an industry that's often shockingly tone deaf for people that produce such sophisticated products, Bethesda seems to have this wrapped up really nice.
And I mean, another perfect example is this year with the Skyrim on Amazon Alexa joke that they did.
Oh, so good.
Where they went so far with the joke, but actually making it a real thing that you can play. That was interesting and kind of cool. It's like, to me, that is Bethesda in a nutshell.
Yeah. I've loved Bethesda for a long time. Obviously, Fallout, very close to my heart. I liked Fallout 4, I think, more than most people did. I actually thought it was superb. And I'm really looking forward to the inevitable release of Elder Scrolls 6. And duh, it's going to be good, because it's very rare that you have those. But I especially love them for their continued commitment to, in the midst of these multiplayer projects, coming back again and again to experimental single player projects, resurrecting Wolfenstein, resurrecting Doom. Those were not guaranteed hits.
Oh, definitely not. Especially Doom.
Like, yeah.
Doom was Doom for all intents and purposes. Like, after Doom 3, like, there was so much hype going into that back on the Xbox. And when it actually happened, it was like, oh, this is a dud. Like, this is not what it should have been.
And then here we get it. And oh, it was so good. Did you play much of it?
I didn't play too much of it. We did a let's play of it, and I loved it. And then we got it on a Switch, and it's been one of my playing games where I play through a little bit here and there. But it's just it blows my mind that a game of that quality can be played on Switch.
The joy of the Doom remake is that the farther you get, the better it gets.
Yeah,
like the last third of the game is the best part of it.
Awesome.
So keep playing,
cool,
because your abilities continue to increase. And when you finally become Doom Guy at the end, when you've got that just unabashed mobility. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I am playing 1993 Doom right now somehow on my Switch, and it's freaking rad.
Yeah.
It's a great feeling.
It's awesome.
Also, a couple of really just baller like fights there at the end that they pull out. It's pretty spectacular. All right, let's move on to the second news story of the day. Item two on the Roper Report, new Anthem gameplay. This from Matt Kim at US Gamer. Shout out to US Gamer. EA released a new 20-minute video of Anthem gameplay with commentary from BioWare lead producer Ben Irving that showcases what players can expect during one of the raids in Anthem. The demo follows three freelancers, the name of mercenaries, who pilot the robot mech suits called Javelins and take on missions across Anthem's world as they embark on a, quote, stronghold mission. Just one type of raid in Anthem where players discover a stronghold and try and uncover its secrets. My friend, what do you got to say about this?
This is the same gameplay that people got to see behind closed doors at E3, correct?
And it's my understanding.
And now it's released. It's 4K. It's the best Anthem's going to look. I'm excited to check this out. I haven't seen it yet, but I appreciate them putting out the behind closed doors demo for the public to see. And that's not always the best call to make, but I feel like for example, with Cyberpunk, I think that it's fine. That game's so far out that I feel like the word of mouth and the buzz around, like, man, did you see it at E3? Like, holy shit, it looks fucking awesome. I feel like that's cool. But with Anthem had such a bad showing at the press conference that I feel like this is kind of trying to get the conversation turned back to a positive
side. I love that the Cyberpunk demo was so compelling. And it's going to kind of, I think, go down in history as one of those great, like, E3 memory moments. Yeah. That demo was extraordinary. You know, the game it's not going to be a grease fire. It's going to be awesome because it's a CD Projekt Red RPG. But that game could turn out far less good than we think. And we're still going to remember that demo forever. Totally. Like, it was so well done. But I love that it keeps coming up in discussions of everything else. It seems like every four or five Roper Report items, Cyberpunk's going to come back up.
Yeah.
Based on the slice of it we saw. But that's the power of a good demo. If you've never been to E3 and seen what a behind closed doors demo is like, they are not always impressive.
Oh no. So many times it's like, it's so much flash for nothing. Like, there'll be like giant setups of like, and I'm using examples that actually were pretty good, but like the haunted house thing for Resident Evil or for Dying Light, Dying Light 2, when I saw it at E3, when you go into the behind closed doors area, there's like the bad guys from Dying Light, like zombie-ish motherfuckers kind of like coming after you. And there's like, then the lights turn on and they like freak out and run out. And I'm just like, I get what you're trying to do. It's so unnecessary, though.
Well, the E3 has an especially weird thing now because since it's opened up to the public, increasingly it's become a show designed to appeal to the crowds that are coming through, to the fans. And I think, by the way, I happen to be one of the people in the industry that, despite the fact that creates some inconveniences for me, is actually a pretty big fan of that.
I think
that's the right move for them.
It absolutely is the right move.
I like that more people have access to that. But a behind closed doors demo, they can be bizarre and weird. You talked about Resident Evil. I actually got to go straight. I didn't get to do the haunted house.
Me too.
So but I heard people that really enjoyed the haunted house segment. Yeah. By the way, that Resident Evil 2 demo, wow.
Awesome. I can't wait for that game. We don't have to wait that long.
No, January. We don't. Not at all. But you haven't seen the Anthem footage yet. Did you see any of the behind closed for Anthem at E3?
Andy got to go see Anthem. I didn't.
Okay, so that wasn't your part of it. Should we shout for Andy or should we move on? What do you think?
Andy!
Andy!
It's fine.
Let's, you know what? On. Andy's not coming. Look at that. Andy does not answer to our call. He's got stuff to do. So we're moving on to item number three in the Roper Report. Soul Calibur 6 adds Talim to roster. This is from Ian Napier. That's right, at Big Twinfinite. I'm in the pocket of Twinfinite. Yeah, you got to have that Twinfinite. Jared's here. If it's Thursday, there's going to be a Twinfinite story.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, today, there might be two. The last priestess of the winds, Talim, is making her way into Soul Calibur 6 this fall, Bandai Namco has announced. First appearing in Soul Calibur 2, shout out to Soul Calibur 2, the elbow blade wielding fighter has gained popularity over the years for her unique moveset and visual flair. Talim's wind-based attacks make her stand out from other fighters in the Soul Calibur roster, and she shows herself to be a fighter more suited for quick and nimble players. Bandai Namco has released a quick trailer of Talim gameplay. So, not huge news, but another piece of that roster, Soul Calibur 6 at E3 looked dope. Geralt was so much fun to play. I love the way the roster is coming together. Most of the characters you expect to be there have now made their appearance.
Yeah.
You know, the announcements are reaching the place where, like, yeah, I'm not really surprised by most of these. Talim was, I think, almost almost a shoe-in.
Yeah, I don't remember who she was. I was just Googling.
She is the agility fighter. Like, yeah. That's her. She's just feels so fast. Almost a Chun-Li-like speed to the to control.
Did you get
her.
To play Soul Calibur?
I did. Yes, indeed. I did. I played as Geralt, and I wondered how the magic was going to work, how that was going to feel balanced, and how it's going to feel quick. They did so well. Yeah. I mean, again, I'm sitting here playing the game for a short period of time, but he felt like Geralt somehow.
Awesome.
But he also felt like a Soul Calibur fighter.
Yeah, they
nailed it.
Good.
He's quick. He's strong. He feels grounded, but not heavy. He doesn't feel like Ganondorf or anything in a Smash Brothers game. He's got more mobility than that, but he also doesn't feel as fast as the most agile fighters.
Yeah.
But all his magic effects, they don't feel ponderous. They're useful. They're really quick responses.
Cool.
And rewarding. And they've got, they at least visually, the area of effect on a lot of them appears to be really well calculated for certain countering certain kinds of attacks. The hitboxes are really interesting for that. So I like the way he felt.
That's great.
Did you play it at all at E3?
I did not.
Yeah, no. I was really... I played that and Jump Force both at Namco's booth. And
yeah.
They were both interesting in very different ways.
Yeah, you did not like Jump Force, correct?
I didn't. No, actually, Jump Force was fine.
Was it you or someone else that was telling me that the demo was set up so poorly that like you couldn't change the options and it was like brain dead easy?
It was very easy. But that's not weird for E3. Honestly, most demos at E3 I play are kind of brain dead easy. They want you to feel like you're winning. So I just kind of discount that. But you couldn't change a lot in the Jump Force demo. I agree. You had a fairly limited selection of characters. But it was fun just running around punching dudes and switching off. Sure. Mm-hmm. I'm all right with that.
Here's a quick thing I want to say that I was thinking about last night. Super Smash Brothers. Of course I was thinking about it. Street Fighter is now in the game, right? It's been since the last one. We got Ryu in there.
Right.
There's the Echo Fighters that they announced at the C3, like Daisy being a Peach Echo Fighter, where it's like essentially clone characters.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I know that they're not going to go too crazy with third-party stuff, but I feel like Shadow the Hedgehog for Sonic and Ken for Ryu.
I think Ken makes
so much sense.
Yeah.
And they should just do it. But then I was thinking, I was like, they need to add more another Street Fighter stage then. And I had an idea, since Street Fighter 2 stages are so iconic, and since all of them are just a flat plane, there's already the Suzaku Castle for Ryu stage in the game. But what if there was a stage in Smash that they do those ones that it's like it constantly changes, where it's all 12 of the
original stages
but like Final Destination style, so it is just like a flat plane, but just the backgrounds, and then every, I don't know, maybe just random where all the stages are there and you play and then it actually has the music.
That's
of the stage
a really
with background.
Cool setup.
It'd
like
be fucking
that.
Awesome.
I think that
somebody
would be
should just do it.
I think that would be a neat stage, having the backgrounds constantly change. I think there's a few things you could do with that, actually. I love the Ken as a mirror fighter.
And another thing that I thought about of why this could actually happen is the Smash Bros. Website. One of the first updates they added was a remix of Vegas theme.
Ooh, okay.
So I'm like, all right, there's some possibilities going on.
Yeah, you could do Vegas stage with the chains in the back and hop up into those. I mean, if you had minor gameplay changes during this, I love the idea of crowd interference of somebody jumping out of the background. One of the people is just cheering, suddenly running in, having the big bell and having it be between you, like moving to the foreground from the Bison stage would be interesting. But if I was going to do a Street Fighter stage, this is so lame, I would just drop the giant car between you and have every time you punch it, an item pop out. Like,
awesome.
That'd be how items are.
That's great.
Because you got to play with items. You're not playing with items. You're playing Smash Brothers wrong. What's that?
Boo.
No, I...
Boo.
People who play Smash Brothers tournament style are the reason I cry before I go to sleep every night.
Good. You should cry.
That's right. All right. Number four. Far Cry 5 gets a photo mode. This from Colin Stevens at IGN. Far Cry 5 will get a photo mode with title update 8 coming later today. According to Ubisoft or Ubiquitous Software's official patch notes. The photo mode will be available in the main menu and solo gameplay modes following today's scheduled maintenance of all platforms. Ubisoft detailed the photo mode, confirming it extends to single-player DLC and Far Cry arcade maps while playing in solo mode, and allows the player to adjust time of day, field of view, filters, and alter the character's facial expressions. Tim Gett, is you a photo mode man?
I am not. Greg Miller is. Greg Miller is a big fan of this photo mode. Love sharing the shit on Twitter. I'm just not.
Not your thing, huh?
No.
Not, you'd rather be out there on that real Instagram, or are you just not a...
The closest thing that I really got into with photo mode was back in, I want to say Smash Bros. Brawl, because like you got trophies and stuff for it.
Okay.
Like Smash Bros. Trophies.
So you wanted to...
I had to do all that.
Just
I didn't have fun doing it.
No, really? Never?
No,
it's
no.
Like, it's not. Don't want to catch
something I had to do.
Okay, so not your thing there. I actually think for open world games, I'm really a fan because so many weird and wacky situations happen in open world games like Far Cry. That's cool to be able to capture them and share them with people.
Totally.
And so if you can make a really funny foot, because as funny as a funny video is, that one perfect shot impact, that kind of almost cartoon visual gag that would make up like a still image meme.
Yeah.
I love that stuff. And a photo mode's perfect for that.
Yeah, see, for me, it's what I typically do in games is I'll do the E3 demo spin. When like you know, you get to a vista and it's Uncharted or Horizon. I just like standing there and then just slowly tilting the right stick in the perfect angle, so it does that thing where it kind of swoops behind the character, and then when it gets to the front of them, it comes up to their face a bit more, and then comes out. It's fucking hot.
I like the E3 demo spin. I do like the idea that just once, like I'm at one of those, and when it comes out from the face of the character, there's just someone standing directly in my nose that wasn't there before to terrify me and then kill you. That's what I want right there. And finally, item number 5, a neat little piece of news here. RPG Maker MV coming to consoles. This is from Sam Cook and TwinFidget. This came just as I was printing this out. NIS America has announced that RPG Maker MV will be coming to Switch, PS4, and Xbox One. RPG Maker MV, the latest in a line of sprite-based RPG creation software, was originally released in 2015 for PC. Represent. While there's no official release date set in the store, that are set in stone, the trailer will be released today and offers the ever ominous coming 2019. You ever play with RPG Maker?
Dude, I loved RPG Maker.
All
never good at it, never spent enough time to actually get anything done. But RPG Maker 95, I want to say, was the name of it. It was the first computer I ever had. I remember trying to make a fucking RPG. I had just played Pokemon, and like it was really probably Pokemon's my first RPG that I ever played.
Okay.
And I definitely ever beat. And I was just so inspired by it. And I was like, oh, the idea of making my own game was so cool. You know, you're a dumb 8-year-old kid. And it's just like,
that's not dumb at all. I think it's spectacular.
Yeah,
and that's how you learn game design.
Exactly. But like that, when you're a kid that likes video games, you're like, I want to make games when I grow up. And it's like, no, you don't. Like some kids do. I didn't. Definitely didn't.
But I still want to make games when I grow up.
So I gave up on those dreams. But I did remember downloading a bunch of RPG Maker games that other people made. And I realized I'm more into that. Game creation, not for me.
Okay.
I remember that I got really into the ROM hacking scene for Super Mario World. And I tried making stuff. I'm like, what am I doing? I don't want to be making these levels. I just want to play what other people do. There's a ROM hack of Super Mario World that was called The Legend of...
Legend of Demo. Okay.
Something like that. Google it. Kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. Please help me out. And it's one of the greatest platformers I've ever played. It is one of the best Mario games I ever played.
I don't think I've ever played this.
It was so... The legend continues. Super Demo World, The Legend Continues.
Super Demo World, The Legend Continues, he says. All right, excellent.
And oh man, it was so good. But I remember it was the same website that I went to where you download ROM hacks and RPG Maker games that you could play through. And there's just something awesome about people that like love the thing, making the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So... What about you?
Likewise, RPG Maker, an important part of my life since the 90s. I first encountered RPG Maker on PlayStation, actually. I first used it on console, even before PC.
And it had that weird adapter, right? Yep.
Although I didn't have the adapter, so I was literally entering all the text with my controller.
Oh my God,
it was really not the way to do it. But yeah, there was a PlayStation version of it, which I might have been the first one to come to America. That or one of the PC ones might have been like fan translated then. And then rapidly it came out to PC after, and I switched to that. I played with it a lot. I made some short games. None of them were any good. I had a friend that made a pretty delightful game. That was just a huge inside joke about our friends.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, that's what everyone wanted to do.
And it was fun. Like, it was really fun. He made this incredible... I have this one particularly cantankerous friend. I love him so much. Shout out, LaShawn.
Shout out to cantankerous.
There is no pleasing him ever. And, like, one of the final challenges of the game was just this dialogue tree where you had to please him. Mm. And if you made one mistake in the conversation, you had to start the whole thing over. And it was really like talking to my friend. It was kind of spectacular. it was a wonderful moment. Well done there, Nate. But yeah, RPG Maker is extraordinarily powerful now. And people have used it to create incredible passion projects and also some extraordinary commercial products. To the Moon, one of my all-time favorite video games. I mean, absolutely a top 20 game for me, is a RPG Maker game. Wow. As it was originally developed in, and a game that everyone ought to be playing. To the Moon may come up again. But so, coming to consoles, that's the interesting part of this for me. PS4, Xbox One, Switch, you don't have to have a PC to do this. I assume if you can develop on consoles, that means you're going to be able to distribute on consoles. Interesting. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, that would make a lot of sense. I'm not familiar with what the MV is. In the RPG Maker?
MV, that's just the newest iteration.
Okay.
That's the latest version of RPG Maker.
Cool.
The one that I use on my PC right now.
I mean, this is huge. It's just taking even more steps towards there being no barrier between people being able to make games and play games that people are making with the rise of indie games in the last 10 years and just how much easier it's been. Like, especially now on the Switch, you can put something out and have it be successful.
Well, I mean, think about like the potential here for like Kinda Funny. I mean, I've walked in every week or so and been like, hey, let's make a video game. You could literally sit down in RPG Maker MV and make like a 10-minute fan game and just distribute it on Switch.
Yeah. No,
and
that's
everybody
cool.
could play it. Yeah. I mean, that'd be amazing.
That's awesome.
Not that we're committing to that or anything.
No, definitely I'm not.
But that's the kind of thing that's possible now. And that's really exciting. And the fact that people can do things like that. I love that.
Yeah.
So yay. I can't wait to hear more about this. Good job, NIS. But those are games that are coming in 2019. Tim,
yes.
If I wanted to play games today, right now, at this very moment, if I wanted to know what new games were available for me to download, purchase at my local store, even order from Amazon, where would I do that?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform is listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Nice. I like that. Very good.
Man, we got a list for you motherfuckers today.
You know what? It's actually a little shorter than the normal
but
Thursday.
Wow. Just looking at some of these pieces of shit.
I don't understand the glorious work. You know, we'll get to Two Crude Dudes.
There's some heat on here, though. There's some fire that
got
I did not
fire?
Realize was coming out today.
Okay, well, let's hear about it. Let's hear about it here. First off, we got Awkward for Switch.
Yeah, Awkward on Switch. Great.
Disease Hidden Object.
Disease Hidden Object. Someone named their game that. They decided that's a good name.
Have you played Disease Hidden Object?
No, I haven't played Disease Hidden Object.
Tim.
I have no idea. Have you?
No. Should I play this before
yes,
GameCast
Yes, you should play
today?
Disease Hidden Object.
I got my Switch here with me.
Oh,
it's time
God.
To download Disease Hidden Object
yes,
before
it
GameCast.
Is.
Ladies and gentlemen, for more on Disease Hidden Object, tune into the next Kinda Funny GameCast.
Yes.
Miles and Kilo.
Miles and Kilo, like
for Switch.
That sounds like it could be interesting, like a cute 2D character platformer.
It's actually
I don't
the
know.
Sequel to Milo and Otis. Mushroom Wars 2 for Switch.
Okay.
The sequel
war
to the
continues.
Ever, yeah, the war continues. Pocket Rumble.
Pocket Rumble. That's the one that I'm super excited about.
Okay.
This game has been one of those ones similar to Hollow Knight where it's like, it's coming to Switch. And then it's like, okay, but when?
Like, so in, tell in me because I haven't played
Pocket Rumble. Jared, you're about to lose your mind.
Oh, am I?
Oh, yeah. This is a Jared-ass game.
Oh, boy.
If I ever saw one.
Excellent.
It's very similar to the old Neo Geo games.
Oh.
It's a fighting game. And if I remember correctly, there's only just two buttons.
Oh.
Yeah,
oh.
Let's look at this motherfucker.
Oh, yeah. They've already got me on the graphics style. Oh, I haven't played this. Oh, it's Chucklefish. Oh, yeah. it looks like Neo Geo Pocket.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh, it looks like Capcom vs. NK Match of the Millennium.
So there you go. Out today.
All right.
I'm excited about this.
Have you ever played Capcom vs. NK Match of the Millennium?
I have not.
Okay.
No, you know what? I have.
That game's real good.
Yeah.
Like, all like retro game irony aside, that game is spectacular.
Yeah.
That is one of the best fighting games ever.
Well, here you go. You got a new one now.
I wonder if it evokes it, whether or not it has an incredible play balance that game did, I wonder. But
yeah.
And also weird Olympic events where Arthur from Ghosts and Goblins is throwing javelins in the Olympics. That's right. All right, so Pocket Rumble. Gonna have to play that. Samurai Showdown 4 for Switch. Shout out to Sammy Show 4. That's not a bad game. Squid's Odyssey for Switch. Super Rock Blasters for Switch. Two Crude Dudes. If I'm correct, my friend, this is Crude Busters, the Data East classic. Two Crude Dudes.
Not familiar.
Crude Busters, the spiritual sequel to Bad Dudes versus Dragon Ninja.
Really?
That's right.
Oh, but are you a bad enough dude?
To rescue Ronnie? I think so.
Yeah?
Yeah. Crude Busters or Two Crude Dudes is a weird, like, semi-sequel to Bad Dudes. And then finally, Yuso for Switch. I don't know anything about Yuso.
Yuso.
New dates, no new dates today, but deals of the day, we got a couple here for you. First, it's the last day of the Steam Summer Sale. That's right. Today is the final day of that. And speaking of Steam Summer Sale, I was talking earlier about To the Moon. Hey, you can buy To the Moon for $3 right now. It will run on a toaster if you plug your television into it. It is a very undemanding game. Please buy that while it's not expensive and play it. It's like 3 hours of your life. And if you don't cry, you're a heartless monster and I don't want to know you. And then finally, get 21 free PC games for Amazon or for Twitch Prime members in July. You heard about this?
Free games?
Mm-mm. Yeah, okay. So if you're an Amazon or Twitch Prime member right now, Amazon is giving away PC games.
Okay.
And that's going on throughout the month. So
you have Amazon Prime.
Literally,
you
just have go Prime. Grab your Twitch Prime and get your free games because they're there.
And while you're there, you know, you might as well subscribe to Kind of Funny Games.
You should subscribe to Kind of Funny Games. You know what? Subscribing to Kind of Funny Games on Twitch, really good idea.
Mm-hmm.
You get to help these guys make a living.
Mm-hmm.
You get to promote things like this.
And you get 21 free games.
You get to feel good about yourself when you go to bed at night. You lay there and you think, wow, today I failed in a lot of different ways, but I succeeded in that.
Hell
that's
yeah.
What you get to think. Time for Reader Mail, which is brought to us today by Marvel Puzzle Quest. Tim,
yes.
Tell us more about it.
Ant-Man and the Wasp are coming. I always mess that up because I start to read it and I see the is. I'm like, that must be grammatically incorrect. But it's not grammatically incorrect because Ant-Man and the Wasp is coming to a theater near you.
It is the subject.
Yes.
One subject. Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Coming to a theater near you very soon. We're about to watch today. Check out our review later on youtube.com/kindoffunny for MCU in review. But we got a game for your phone on the show today that we've been spending some quality time with lately. Greg's been loving it. The game is Marvel Puzzle Quest, and the folks at D3Go are upsizing the fun with numerous Ant-Man and the Wasp happenings this month. Marvel Puzzle Quest is Marvel's only match 3 puzzle RPG mobile game experience. You can download it for free today. It's the real Puzzle Quest game. It's not some weird knockoff. It's actually Puzzle Quest. In Marvel Puzzle Quest, you can create a custom team from the Marvel Universe that features such characters like Iron Man, Black Panther, Deadpool, Rogue, Gambit, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones. The gang is all here. There are more than 150 superheroes and villains packed into the game. Once your team is set, you can join your friends or other Marvel enthusiasts and be part of a mighty alliance and compete against others on the leaderboards. If we all love a great comic story, in here you battle your way through some really fun and well-written story events from the Marvel Universe and participate in various Marvel-inspired events. And right now, there's a whole bunch of Ant-Man stuff going on to celebrate Ant-Man and the Wasp coming out. We have a special offer for new players. You can download Marvel Puzzle Quest by using the link in the description or head over to www.d3go.com/kindoffunnygames and get yourself 3 free tokens for the Partners in Crime Vault to possibly earn Ant-Man, Wasp, or other great rewards to add to your collection. That's d3go.com/kindoffunnygames.
Spectacular. Thank you for that news, Tim. And now, from the readers, ladies and gentlemen, question number one. Hey, Tim and Jared, this is from Duarte. I'm assuming I assume that correct. Either Duarte or Duarte. I'm not actually sure about the pronunciation. So I'm going to say Duarte. Hey, Tim and Jared. So this is a question that you may or may not have talked about in some way or another, but it's been with me for a while. What do you think was the main catalyst behind Fortnite's abysmal, that's an interesting choice of words, takeover of PUBG's place? In my personal experience, I would much rather play PUBG than Fortnite, but I don't have either a gaming PC or an Xbox, so now only Fortnite scratches that itch right now. Do you think launching free on PS4 was a big driver, much like Rocket League's example, or is it more PUBG's fault for lack of support? All the best and Portuguese love.
I think that there's there are many factors that contribute to it, but the obvious ones are the game worked and ran well. The game was free and available on many consoles and PCs and devices that you have something that Fortnite can play on and play well on. And also, I think that it was the perfect answer to PUBG not working, and it kind of being that there was this story of like, oh, Fortnite is just copying what PUBG did. Everyone loves what PUBG did. It's like, oh, but it works, and there's a fun look to it. And I feel like there's a culture around Fortnite that never kind of got there with PUBG. PUBG's just, oh, okay, realistic looking, a lot of grass, a lot of whatever. Fortnite, the world has character. You know what I mean? It's just like the whole fucking match is a lot of grass. Whereas it's like, you know, with Tilted Towers and with like all the different locations in Fortnite, it's like the world feels.
PUBG has that too, though.
It has it, but it's like the world feels like a character more. And like with all the events that they do in Fortnite.
The events, I think, is what pushed it.
And, you know, you can make your character look different in PUBG, but making him look different in Fortnite and the different gliders and all the stuff that they have going there, and the dances and like the all that dumb bullshit makes something really special.
I think you sum it up there. I agree with absolutely everything you ever said, and I'm going to, or just said about this.
Ever said.
Ever said. I agree with everything you ever said. Absolutely everything you just said about that, with an added additional caveat. All that adds up to me to what I believe is the most kid-friendly game in the history of the medium. It is the most kid-friendly game in the history of video games because of all those things you bet. It's cosmetically interesting, but free. It runs on any kind of device. Every kid on the planet Earth has some kind of access, whether it be at their public school or on their phone or to some device that will play Fortnite that lets them play with their friends.
It's the dances, crazy.
The culture, all that. This is a game, and I think as old people talking about it, we sometimes lose sight of this. This is a game that children love. Their parents will let them play because they don't have to pay for it and because it's not ultra violent and because it's something all their friends are playing so they can pressure them into it. It is the perfect game for kids. And I think more than anything else, that has propelled this game forward. We forget that Super Mario's rise to prominence when he became a cultural revolution in 1985-86 in America was because he resonated first with children. And I think that's what's happening with Fortnite.
I mean, it's mind-blowing the reach that this game has. Yesterday, I was at lunch with Gia and her sister, and her sister started talking to me about Fortnite. She was like, yeah, I was playing it last night. What the you were playing Fortnite?
Because
like that
everywhere.
Doesn't even make sense.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
Like she doesn't play games,
but she does now. That's we have not had one of those transformative moments really since the introduction of the iPhone and the Wii. Wii did this.
Wii
like yeah, iPhone brought people into gaming that hadn't played in a long time or never had. Wii brought people into gaming that
for that things like Pokemon.
Yeah,
I would say like, we're the same type of cultural phenomenon.
So we're like 10. It's been like 10 years since we've had one of these or more, maybe 12, 10 to 12 years.
Guitar Hero.
Yeah. OK, there. That's the same kind of thing. And now we're finally having one again. Yeah. But unlike all of those, you don't have to pay money for this one.
I know. It's crazy.
It's freaking amazing. I think that's it. So there's our take on it. Happy Thursday. It was a pleasure meeting everyone at prom this past weekend. You guys throw a rockin' party. This is from Why Not Pete. I find it increasingly difficult to determine how a Kickstarter game will turn out. I was certain Mighty No. 9 would be a home run because it had Inafune, but that turned out to be a flop. Meanwhile, Kickstarters that came from unknown teams with no history of making games like Hollow Knight and Hyper Light Drifter have been huge successes. How do you... Okay, so he says asses. How do you asses? But I think he means how do you excess. Although I think it's fun to say asses because... It's a funny body part. Whether a Kickstarter is worth backing. So how do you think we should be, or do you think we should be worried about high-profile Kickstarters like Shenmue and Bloodstained? Once again, that from Why Not Pete. Your thoughts.
I mean, I always try to look at it, whether it's a Patreon or a Kickstarter or Indiegogo. I'm the type of person that likes to pay for the product, like knowing what I'm getting. There's been so many Kickstarters I've backed for or any of those things for musicians, and I will back at the thing that gets me the vinyl of the, you know, the collector's vinyl or whatever it is. But I tend to not do the things that are promising something super far in the future. I'm taking this out of video games, but I haven't really supported any video game, I don't think, with the exception of Amplitude. Because Amplitude's a thing where I'm like, this is one of my favorite games of all time. Yeah. I have to make this fucking thing happen.
Okay.
But even then, I supported at the level that got me the game, you know. When it comes to tech and stuff, like recently I was looking at this bedside table that was a smart table, and it has like wireless charging for everything. And it, like,
you're not allowed on the show anymore. Use the term smart table.
It glows. It glows blue. And
smart.
It's
toilet.
It's I do have a smart toilet. It's fucking great.
I've never hated you more.
Yeah,
please continue.
I know. But looking at it, it's like I really want this thing. It's like, but I don't know when it's actually coming out. I'm going to wait till it comes out and I'll buy it. And if it doesn't, then I don't fucking get it. Like, I didn't trust it. You know what I mean?
Makes sense.
And when it comes to these games, it's like, look, it's the same as pre-ordering. I pre-ordered Devil May Cry 2 back in the day, and I thought there was no chance that game was going to be bad. I love Devil May Cry 1, and it's like, what, the sequels are good. You know, and more often than not, sequels are good to video games.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget walking into that EB Games and picking up the copy and the guy looking at me being like, have you seen the new EGM? And I was like, no. Ooh. And he's like, dude, look at the review. And I turned and looked at it and I was like, I was mortified.
Sushi X was just more just terrified of what
like,
happened.
You motherfucker. Like, yeah. It ruined everything. And then that piece of shit game, well, it doesn't exist now, so it doesn't matter. But,
you purged it from existence.
Yeah, it's that type of thing that I'm looking at it and I'm like, for these games,
yeah,
Mighty Number 9 should have been good. People that backed that on Kickstarter expected something,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't get that thing.
Okay,
but how much were you really investing in it? You know, like it's not you investing in it. I feel like the people that put their money into Mighty Number 9. Didn't make a bad decision.
Mm-hmm. There were a lot of good reasons to think that game was going to turn out fairly well. The people involved had a great prestige. That there were good studios involved in its development. It just didn't turn out that way. Yeah, you and I probably have slightly different perspectives on this. I do back a fair number of games, or historically have backed a fair number of games. For example, he mentions Bloodstained. I backed that side out. I've played the demos of Bloodstained now, and I feel pretty good about that investment. It looks like it turned out pretty well. So mm-hmm. I have two physical copies coming on two different platforms. Shout out to Vita. But I want to live in a world, or I would rather live in a world where I lose some money on games that turn out bad or never happen. But I also have the opportunity to back good games that would never exist if I didn't back them.
Yeah.
Like I just made that choice years ago. It's like I'd rather lose some money on the ones that don't turn out well and still have these games that would never have happened otherwise. And that's why I back games on Kickstarter. I'm still discriminating. I do look at who's involved, or at least I look at the concept, the pedigree, their timetable. The farther out it is, the more likely I am to back it, not the less. Because I know how long it takes to make games
mm-hmm.
and I know how much money it takes to make games roughly now. And so I'm like, you know what, if you're promising this much this soon, I get wary.
Yeah.
Unless you're obviously very far along in development. And I get wary when people start piling on new features after their Kickstarter. Like, oh, we got so much more money.
Definitely. But stretch goals can get really scary really fast. Cause then that's when the overpromising starts.
Begins to happen,
when we first launched Kind of Funny and the Patreon and I guess the brand back in September 2014, when we put it out, we had a bunch of stretch goals and we're like, if we hit this, we'll do that. If we hit this, we'll do that. And at 10K, we'll do a live event where mm-hmm. we'll, you know, have everybody fly out to San Francisco and do something crazy. And we're like, we're not going to hit that. We hit that in one day.
Yeah.
And it's like, fuck, that means we promised all of these shows, like a bunch, way more shows than we had the means of creating. And a live show and all this stuff. And it's like, we eventually had to apologize. And, you know, we did the Kickstarter thing years later. No, not usually, I guess a year later. It's like, hey, a lot of the shows we promised, we thought made sense at the time and they don't anymore. Mm-hmm. And we definitely overpromised, but we're over delivering in other ways. And we kind of shifted focus. But there's a lot of people that we really burned on that feel burned at least. And
I think that's extraordinarily totally frank of you to be willing to say that, Tim. That's really great.
It is what it is.
Yeah, I admire you a lot for
our
that.
Best.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's obvious you care about the people that have invested in you, and it's pretty spectacular. Actually, that's very reassuring to hear. I want to make a video game. If I'm ever going to do it, it's either going to require a Kickstarter or an angel investor. Or a partnership of some kind. And so I look at this and think, I hope people don't give up on it because I have a dream and I think I can pull it off.
Yeah.
But I'm going to need money. Mm-hmm. And when that time comes around. So those are two different perspectives in answer to your question, why not Pete? Both of which I think have a lot of validity to them and not exactly opposed so much as complimentary.
Mm-hmm.
Also, shout out to Why Not Pete.
Shout out to Why Not Pete.
Shout out to Why Not Pete, indeed. Greetings, Why Not Pete. From Vanilla Heist. Yesterday, Tim reported that Nintendo said they haven't shown their full lineup for 2018. After thinking, it doesn't make sense that there is some unannounced secret AAA game that might shift their revenue in a major way. It doesn't feel like their style. My thoughts are that it might be the N64 Classic that everyone is expecting, but we have yet to hear about. We got the refiled patent a few months ago, but that was about it. It makes sense not to disclose it before the official announcement. And as we've seen from the NES and SNES, this thing is going to fly off the shelves and be a major moneymaker. Just wanted to know kind of Funny's thoughts on it.
I will never forget the morning that I woke up. It was around Comic-Con 2 years ago that I woke up to an email from Nintendo that said NES Classic Edition. And I was like, what is this? And I opened up the email, looked at the images and saw what it was. And I was like, this can't be real, but they're really putting 30 games on this thing.
Yep.
They're bringing back the box looks like the box art, like all of it. I was like, this is too good to be true for an announcement that there wasn't a direct, there wasn't an E3 thing. It was just random fucking day.
Yep.
It just happened. And then the Super Nintendo, same thing. I know we're all like for there was so many topics we did on Gamescast that were like, what 30 games would be on the Super Nintendo Classic? It's like they're not actually going to do a Super Nintendo Classic, and then they did it.
Now people have been commenting for a while. You know, why are you guys talking about how Red Dead 2 is just going to kill everything? Or this is the kind of product, an N64 Classic is the kind of product that could sell at exactly the same time and do great.
Yeah,
dropped exactly the way you're describing.
Nintendo's in a kind of a different lane.
They are, and it's there's a different overlap, kind of product. This is a wrapped Christmas present. That's what this is. This is something you sell in October or November so that somebody can open it in December and be like, my N64! I remember Wave Race and I forgot how ugly it is. Oh, Lord, the alpha. The fog. But yeah, it's...
There's problems with the N64 that the other classic systems didn't have, mainly the controller.
Yep.
And how much fun of the N64 is the multiplayer side of it. And licensing, there's a lot more issues with N64 classics than there were with Super Nintendo or NES games.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very interested. There is also a chance it's a Game Boy classic.
Yeah, that could happen too.
Like they could do that and then N64, they can figure it all out. In terms of unannounced secret AAA game, I don't think that there is one. I like I said yesterday on the show, I would expect's not the right word. I would not be surprised to see a Metroid Prime trilogy and a new Super Mario Bros. U port. To help them get their numbers, because those are the type of game, those are the surefire hits. They know they're going to sell millions of copies of New Super Mario Bros. U. I would predict 10 million.
What, 10 million?
10 million.
So? Yeah.
Within a couple months. Like, that's such easy money. Metroid Prime trilogy, I mean, if that thing hit a million, it would be a success. And I think that it would.
You saw how Kirby sold.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is it would be a success at a million. I think that it can probably hit 2-3.
Yeah, it really could. I'm so excited about you because people who didn't play you missed one of the best Mario games of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremy Parrish, whose opinion I admire on just about everything. He's one of the most thoughtful people in this industry. That's his favorite Mario game.
And his list that he does for Kotaku?
No, I think that one might have been US Gamer or it might have been Kotaku.
He just makes lists where he ranks different franchises. He's done Metal Gear, he's done Final Fantasy, and he's done Mario. I just love reading it because he has such a strong opinion that I do not agree with. But it's consistent.
Yeah.
And when you go through his list, it's like you understand why he's making
He always makes his arguments.
Yep.
He's like, no, here's why. He's very good at here's why. The guy knows old games better than almost anybody.
Mm-hmm.
He knows new games better than almost anybody. People think of him as a historical specialist, but it's not like Jeremy doesn't love new games.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughtful dude. Yeah, check those lists out. But yeah, and when you comes, that's just going to be spectacular. When the Game Boy Portable comes out, assuming that happens, or the Game Boy, is it going to be a Game Boy Mini? Do you think it'll be micronized?
I feel like we're in a weird place now with the NES and Super Nintendo. Like, the NES set the bar for what this is. It's like, okay, the console's small, the controllers are normal, whatever. And so Super Nintendo, it was an obvious iteration of that. We're at a point now with both the Game Boy and N64, it gets kind of weird. Mm-hmm. N64, I guess, isn't that weird, but it is just the controllers.
No, it's the multiple controllers thing. And maybe they're looking at that as an opportunity. Maybe they'll just manufacture way more controllers than they did for the other two and be like, we're selling this with one controller, and we know you're going to buy four.
There's just something really sad to me about the fact that so far, at least, the classic systems use the stupid proprietary Wii.
Oh, the Wii plug?
Yeah.
Well, that keeps that means Nintendo's going to make more money on selling controllers. I mean, that's
no, but I mean, like, how nice would it have been if the controllers were either Bluetooth or at least USB so that they could be used with the Switch?
I would like that a lot too. Although I did appreciate it because it allowed me to take my Japanese SNES Wii controllers and use them on my use them on my SNES Mini and my NES Mini. When you couldn't get a second controller for the NES Mini, that was a way to play it. So I was actually pretty excited. I got one early. The worst thing I've ever done as a human is ask my wife, who was badly injured in a car accident and still has trouble standing for long periods, to wait in line outside a GameStop for 3 or 4 hours one morning for me so that I could get an NES Mini.
Did you get it?
I did, yeah. Right, well, she brought a folding chair. But it's still maybe the most cruel act I've ever performed. that or when I threw the bird seed on her when we were surrounded by emus. That was pretty good, too.
Jesus Christ.
That was a good day. What do we have here? This one from Anthony. Hey, Tim and Jared. It seems like we're all expecting some type of DLC for Super Mario Odyssey at E3, but nothing was revealed. Do you think that they decided not to release DLC and just put any levels into a second game to get it released sooner? Would love to hear your opinion.
You know, I think it's very bizarre that not only have we not seen real Mario Odyssey DLC, but they did give us Mario DLC that was that weird balloon mode. Like, I feel like that's almost a admittance that there's probably an Odyssey 2 coming out. Because for Zelda, when Breath of the Wild came out, like, they announced the DLC plan. It's like, hey, there's two packs. The first one's a bunch of bullshit. The second one is where there's really going to be some quality shit. And I feel like if Mario Odyssey was going to have substantial DLC, they would have said the same thing. The first one's going to be balloon world shit. Then the second one is going to be actual more worlds, more moons and stars and all that shit.
Yeah, I think I said, if I recall correctly, that I expected there to be a Mario Odyssey 2, and that if we didn't see DLC at E3, there was absolutely going to be one. And I stand by that now. I think it actually makes more sense for them. I think they're looking at their projections going, we can probably outsell the original Odyssey with an Odyssey 2. Why not bring in more per unit than we would on the DLC? That's my suspicion.
Totally. Let's do one more question.
Jared. One more question. Well, then we're going to do this one right here that says, I've been saving this question for a show with Tim and Jared.
Oh, my God.
I want to talk about the idea of too many games and shovelware on online storefronts. A lot of people say that Sony and Microsoft need to be more stringent on what they allow in their store to prevent trash like Life of Black Tiger, I haven't played that, from overshadowing actual great games. But is this really an issue? Do truly special games get buried? I don't see how that'd be possible today. If your game is truly noteworthy, it will be found. Take Celeste, for example. I don't think there was ever a chance of the game not getting recognition because there are simply too many outlets trying to be the ones who are responsible for turning people onto the best of the best. I'll concede there might be good games that go unnoticed, but to double back on the old KFGDQ, do we even have time for just good anymore? The TLDR, truly great and special games, don't get lost under the volume of trash. The right people will find your game. Thanks, Piblicon, Pierre.
My dude, Pierre. You know, I actually tend to agree with what you're saying. I do think that the truly special games will somehow trickle up and find their way to success. But I also think there is too much shit, and it's not so much that the shit is hiding the good stuff. It's just that it's making the good stuff look less pretty. And it's just convenience. It's just when you load up your Switch and you got fucking games like whatever it was called, diseasetraumacenter.org or whatever the hell it was.
Well, I don't know what the one he's talking about there. Trauma Center, actually. That's a good
Not
game.
Trauma Center. Fucking Disease Hidden Object.
Oh, yeah. Disease Hidden Object. Oh, I'm going to play that today, though. I'm very excited to play Disease. I'm going to come out of here. It's going to be like a $70 title. Anyway, continue.
I just feel like it's not... I check the Switch eShop every once in a while just to like look at what's coming up. And it's just so much just nonsense, you know? But I'm like, I feel like it's on the curation side that needs to be, they need to fix that, right?
Yeah. I tend to fall a little more the other way. I have been in too many situations where games that I and others thought needed to be highlighted were not regarded as marketing priorities for an outlet, that there was concern that they might not get the attention they deserve. We talked about this some on Gamescast last week, you know, how hard it is just to draw attention to a game simply in the matter of no one's going to watch the video you make about it because no one's heard of it. I've been in too many situations like that that make me believe that sometimes it's very hard to even get the voice out there to elevate a really good game because people sometimes make conservative decisions about content at places. And by the way, that's not just like big media Royale. It's that YouTubers too.
Totally.
The YouTuber, a single YouTuber may have passion for something, but when they figure out you don't care about that product they're working on, they're going to have to move on pretty quick if they want to retain their audience, because algorithms do punish you for having videos that do less well than others. And I think we know a lot about that.
Mm-hmm.
That said, also I think about the fact that there are too many games that everybody missed in the history of video games back when there were fewer games. And when there were only a few hundred games a year instead of a few thousand, there was still stuff that got missed. And this has gone on throughout the history of video games. There are constantly hidden gems from every era. Not enough people alive played the Guardian Legend, and it's a shame. Because it was available everywhere and no one got a hold of it. And there's one of those or 10 of those for every era and every console. And that's what makes me believe that now when there's even more games, it's even worse.
Mm-hmm.
So again, two opinions on that. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to squad up from Jake Higgins on the Nintendo Switch. I just got my Switch last week and I'm really enjoying it so far, but I'd love some best friends to play stuff with. So far, I only have Mario Kart and Fortnite, but I'm looking to get Mario Tennis Aces and maybe Splatoon 2 down the road. And yes, of course, Zelda. Let's tear some shit up on those kart tracks. His number, SW44140862832208. Once again, those repetition-friendly codes for Switch. Friend code, get ready. SW-4414-0868-3208. Jake Higgins wants your help on Nintendo Switch. Give it to him. Give him a little bit of love there. Tim, what are we wrong about?
Not much. Capitalist Pig says the Bethesda hashtag was #SavePlayerOne.
There we go.
Kebab says, another in the line of pitiful Odyssey DLC are the hidden paintings on Twitter. They're still adding them, as well as the new costumes, which they're also still doing. And a concerned fan says, Jared said he threw bird seeds on his wife while they were petting emus. I couldn't have heard that right. Please confirm that I'm wrong.
So, as a terrible human being, I've been married for many years now. Mm-hmm. My wife and I got married when we were babies, and we're approaching our 17th wedding anniversary this month.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, we've married a long time. Thank you very much.
That's excited. Crazy.
Yeah, it's coming up actually just a little later this month, so... But in a long marriage, ladies and gentlemen, sometimes some aggression may build inside each of you, and you may occasionally find opportunity to release that aggression in cruel and terrible ways. We were at a drive-through safari petting zoo that had all kinds of large animals there outside the car, and mostly keep your windows rolled up and don't fool with them. But they let you buy bird seed at the entrance for when you encounter some of the birds along the way. My wife is deathly afraid of emus. She regards them as horrible, evil dinosaur monsters.
Yeah. Emus and ostriches are fucking evil.
So we drove up and there were three emus on her side of the car. I was driving and we do have window locks on her vehicle. And I just decided in that moment that a few years worth of lost arguments needed to be resolved in my heart. And so I rolled down her window, locked it open, put the car in park, and threw birdseed all over her. And three emus immediately entered the car as much as an emu can and proceeded to remove the birdseed from her as she screamed and flailed.
Were you not worried that they were going to kill her?
No, I was not at all worried. They're emus. They wanted birdseed. They didn't want to hurt wife. Besides, they couldn't get their deadly claws in, only their large heads.
Jesus Christ.
So as to this day, I think that's the meanest thing I've ever done to anyone.
Yeah.
And I wish I hadn't cackled and laughed, but I totally cackled and laughed. This community, the Kind of Funny Best Friends, give me way too much credit for being a decent human being. Like, oh, you're so sweet with Angie. You kissed on stage. It was fun. And we did. And we love one another very much. But I shouldn't have enjoyed that moment so much. But I do. I still think about it and belly laugh. It makes me so happy.
You're a monster.
So that's the answer.
So Jared, you got a new rotating segment that you got here today.
Oh, really? We're going to do that? I thought we were out of time. Okay, we can do that. I just threw the page away, however, for that. This new rotating segment here. I like to get salty sometimes, but somebody wrote in, hey, KFGD crew, I have a segment idea for Jared. Many people, including myself, love when you get salty, Jared. But something else I love is that you do get overly giddy about some obscure video game while Tim sits there and has no idea what you're talking about. So how about a dedicated minute or two of doing that? Yeah, this may technically happen already on pretty much every episode. It does.
It does.
But I feel like
it happened with Pocket Rumble.
Oh, totally.
You haven't even played that game.
But I think it should get its own little segment, Time and Name. Heck, you guys could even call Cool Greg onto the mic to be confused as well. Oh, thanks, guys, for everything you do. P.S. That shit was crazy when Smash Mouth came in. And that's from DH Canada.
DH Canada, my fucking right. Man. So, yeah. I think we're not going to do it for this show. We need to figure out a good name for that segment.
Okay.
And then we'll figure out
do that. Yeah, I could definitely. I could talk about some obscure games while people.
I say we save that.
Yeah, I think we save it too. No, I'm saying that we can roll that out over time.
Oh,
I
like that very cool.
Much. I'm sure the YouTube comments will love that just as much as they do when I do it any other time. Be very excited about that,
Jared. You did a great job hosting it.
Well, that's very kind of you. Thank you.
Tomorrow. It's me and you again.
It is you and I again.
Rounding out the week.
Indeed. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for watching, listening at all, etc. Supporting us in this life that we manage to have each and every day. It's kind of a fairy tale and you allow it to keep going. The fact that you care warms our hearts and minds and gives us the strength to go on with another day. So thanks a lot. And until next time, we'll see you.